RNZ Nationals, Friday afternoon. And it's time for Critter of the Week. We do it each week. We love it. It's a chance to meet an individual New Zealand native or endemic species that is under threat. And we choose the less charismatic ones, the ones that don't get much share of the attention during the day-to-day news cycle. Joining me from Forest and Bird, Nicola Tookie. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. I felt a bit like you yesterday. I was behind the scenes at Auckland Zoo in their kiwi incubation zone, which was so cool. They've got one room with eggs, which are being warmed to the correct temperature, and another room for hatched chicks. And it was pretty cool. I got to pat a baby kiwi, which is a first for me, and also see the eggs up close, which was a first as well.
Oh, how awesome. I am very familiar with the kiwi nursery unit at Auckland Zoo, and they do an incredible job in terms of raising those kiwi chicks. Did you have the wonderful experience? Because I've seen, because my social media feeds are entirely dominated by, you know, the outfits like Auckland Zoo, conservation organisations and volunteer conservation, basically it's just full of nature nerds.
Yeah.
I saw one of the kiwi incubation outfits put up some pictures of an egg that had just started to pip, you know, where just the cracks just start to appear. So I don't know if you saw that, but one of the coolest things I've seen is when those kiwi specialists have got the eggs in the incubator and they have to turn them, you know, to make sure that they're getting
like
aerated.
Like a fine bottle of champagne.
Oh, well, I wouldn't know about that because I...
careful quarter turn.
I'm pretty sure Lindauer doesn't count. but, you know, Jesse, you do move in high-rolling circles. So in any case, I can only but imagine. But no, in turning the eggs, one of the coolest things I've seen is when they have the eggs in the incubator and they're turning them and they whistle. And if a chick who is about to hatch, because it takes them a really long time, if you whistle like... at the egg, it wriggles and it dances around.
Yeah, I got a demonstration of that from Natalie Clark, bird. She was the bird woman, I was going to call her. It's so cute. Doesn't always work. Doesn't work on cue, but if she whistles in just the right way, the egg will do a little wiggle. It's an interview in its own right, that one. I'll probably get Natalie in to chat about it. But, to pat a baby kiwi up close, it's amazing.
They are incredible. It takes them like 3 days to get out of those eggs. So she's a big job.
And there's no chance of them taking you by surprise.
No, they come out kind of looking like they accidentally fell in the dishwasher or something. but they are the reason that duck rangers and kiwi conservation groups all over the country take the eggs and raise the chicks first in an incubator, hatch them in an incubator, then they move them to predator-free, often islands or creche areas, is that the basic rule is a kiwi can hold its own against a stoat, for example, once it reaches 1.2 kilograms. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, though, they are... a free lunch for all of those mammalian predators marauding around our forests. And there was a study in the 90s that showed that in areas where there was no pest control, 9 out of 10 North Island brown kiwi chicks were being killed were not surviving through to their first year of life.
I don't want to correct the OG, but the number I've heard and that Natalie told me yesterday was 19 out of 20 even, so only like 5%
of them
survived.
You're quite right. Yeah, you're quite right. I actually caught myself saying that and thought, he'll never notice, but well done. It is 19 out of 20 kiwi chicks.
Yeah. I've been taught by the master. So anyway, we will get Natalie in and chat about kiwi at some point, but our focus is on less charismatic critters, and you couldn't get much less charismatic than the marine caddisfly, Nicola.
Do you think?
Oh,
I don't know.
Have you seen the picture?
But hang on. Hang on, it's not the picture, it's the story. So I don't know about you.
Tell that to the people on Tinder.
So I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I was very into looking in my local creek over the back fence and finding all kinds of amazing little creatures.
Yeah, we used to go up to Waikato University, actually, and trawl for guppies and things and bits and pieces.
Yeah, Yeah, so caddisflies have always fascinated me because they're the ones, and there's a huge range of caddisfly species, and they're mostly found in freshwater, which is why we're talking about this one, right? Because this is a very unusual one in terms of it's actually a family, which are marine caddisflies, which is very unusual. But back to the freshwater environment. Some caddisfly larvae stick little tiny little stones all over themselves to hide themselves from potential predators, and they live in there eating stuff on the rocks. Some have like a little they make themselves like a little hard sleeping bag type thing that's like almost looks like a wee piece of wood. Most caddisfly species make these sorts of cases when the larva, and they glue it all together with silk that gets pulled from out the front of their head, which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah.
So we have 239 species of caddisfly that live in freshwater environments in New Zealand. However, some of these have taken to the ocean. So there are five species of marine caddisfly in this family that we're going to talk about today, which is the Chathamidae, and they're all endemic to New Zealand. There's only one other marine caddisfly species in the world.
Huh.
So we somehow managed to hit the jackpot
Yeah, and
with
that's.
marine
Is that
caddisflies.
New South Wales? Is that the other place?
Yes,
Yeah,
so
all this part of the
so
world.
nearby. And the reason that caddisflies are so important is they are one of those amazing species that provides a service to the rest of us. So they're hoovering around, they're scraping around under rocks, and they're processing organic matter and keeping things nice and clean. And they are also, the larvae are an important food source for fish. So anyway, the Chathamidae species are found in rock pools. The adult, so I'm largely talking about the larva. Because they're really interesting. They're the ones who make the little protective camouflage huts and bags around themselves. And the larvae live in these rock pools that gets washed out by the tides. Now, you were casting aspersions about the appearance of the adult. But I think, so they basically just look like a wee fly with
Yeah,
skinny legs.
it looks like a almost like a moth, don't you think?
Or like a crane fly that someone cut its legs in half. I don't know.
Yeah, you're really selling it, Nick.
they're not very strong flyers as an adult, and they, kind of look like, do you know what? The description is that when they're on the wing, they look very erratic. And my kind of reflection on that is when I was a kid, I loved The Greatest American Hero. So this is gonna age me slightly here.
No, I'm totally with you, yeah.
And he, of course, had that super, he had that alien suit that allowed him to fly. And the premise of the entire show, and he was a hero, he would go around and save people and do things. But when he got the suit, he lost the instruction manual. So he never quite knew how to fly properly. And
Yeah.
so he was sort of prang into things. And so I imagine that the adults of the marine caddisflies fly like a marine caddisfly version of The Greatest American Hero, is where I was going with that
Look
sort
what's
of
happening to
analogy.
me. I can't believe it
I can't believe
myself.
it myself.
Oh, we've got to
Oh,
play a bit of
gosh.
that. I'll see if I can find
I think you need to.
it.
Okay. Back, we don't quite know what the adults are eating, and whether in fact they are eating at all, because many of the freshwater caddisflies don't eat as adults. And we see that quite a lot in the insect world. There are species of moths and butterfly, for example, that don't bother with the eating because their purpose is the other thing that is required
Yes.
for
Yep.
the continuation of a species.
Yep.
So they're just
Very
focused on the
delicately
mating.
explained, Nicola.
Yeah, I know, which is highly unusual for me on a Friday
I know, maybe
afternoon
we're both
on this
growing
show.
up.
Maybe I'd say the jury's still out on that. I kind of like caddisflies as well because they could be all kinds of things. Maybe they're some of them are filtering and collecting, and some of them are gathering, and some of them are scraping, and some of them are shredding. They're basically like almost like that Divergent movie where each of the little gangs had their own set of skills. They The larvae are feeding on coralline seaweeds. I don't know if you know about coralline seaweeds. We should talk about them. I'm Coraline. And those are those tiny little pinky, look like coral, actually seaweeds, but they're quite crunchy because they're kind of calcium based. So if you look into a rock pool and see the sort of pinky purple, looks like coral but isn't, that's coraline algae.
I've just Googled them. I know what you're talking about.
So the larvae are probably, and that's what the larvae are eating, sorry. So the thing that everyone loves about caddisflies, if you're, like me and you wax poetic about them, is this ability to collect things around them and make these kind of, well, the caddisfly larvae make these special protective cases, right? And so, like I say, some of them do it out of stones and some of them do it out of little bits of sticks and that kind of thing. But what I think is really amazing is, and I saw images of this last year, there's a French artist who decided to use the encase-making abilities of the caddisflies to create art. And so he reared some larvae at home, and instead of stones and rocks and natural things, he gave them like pieces of gold and little pearls and little jewels, which they then wove into these elaborate, incredible jewel-encrusted cases. So I thought that was just, as an aside, but when art and nature collide, often there are amazing results.
Yeah, that might be an opportunity for a budding local artist, right? It's doing it with our own endemic caddisfly.
I would have to consider the ethical and
All
legal
right, all
impacts of
right, all
that, but
right.
perhaps.
You're always stopping me turning our native species into jewellery, Nick.
No, Rosie strikes again. I'm sorry. Leave the nature alone. So,
There's the Wetapunga
what?
earrings. There's the Peripatus necklace. Thumbs down
Huggable
from Nicholas. Yeah,
dusters.
exactly.
So, they will pick up little bits and pieces of when they're not picking up bling. They're in the real world, in the rock pools, they're picking up little pieces of shell, little bits of stones, and then they use this kind of this homemade head silk. They are firing silk out the front of the head to stitch it all together. And then it's a bit like when you go camping and it's just that little bit too cold. So you just have your head sticking out and maybe your arm out so you can reach your cup of coffee. It's basically like that, just the front legs and their head hang out.
And at their best, Nicola, when they're beautifully adorned with all this detritus, how would you rate their attractiveness out of 10?
It's hard. I'm going to average it out because you're asking me to combine both the adults and the larvae, which are completely different beasts. So I reckon they are a five. So I would give the larva a six, the adults a four, and ergo a five from me.
Well, I'm swiping left, but I've enjoyed hearing more about them today. And just for you, Nicola, we'll go out with a bit of The Greatest American Hero.
Yes. Thanks, Jesse.
Look at what's happened to me. I can't believe it myself.